the limit. To our experience, it's scary, but it's all right, and everything is finite.
And only we are the nonprofits. Hi, everybody. I'm the host, Jeff D. My co-host is Dennis Lube.
Howdy.
And our engineer is Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
Russell Glasser, the producer, is out today. We are live March 11, 2006, broadcasting from Dillahunty International Studios in beautiful Austin, Texas. Today's opening music was Finite Equals All Right by David Byrne from his album Feelings. Our show is...
But not nothing more than feelings.
That's right, Dennis. Our show is brought to you by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization promoting positive atheism and the separation of church and state. ACA has a number of weekly events, including our regular Sunday morning meetings at Romeo's at 1500 Barton Springs Road here in Austin, except for the third Sunday of each month when we have a lecture series. ACA Happy Hour is at Antonio's near Highway 35 and 183 every Thursday night at 7:30. For more information about ACA activities and events, you can call our voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visit the ACA website at www.atheist-community.org. Want to remind everyone listening that when we broadcast live, which is every other weekend, every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central Time, you can participate in the show by logging into the chat room. For instructions on how to do that, visit our website, www.nonprofits.org, and a hearty hello to everybody who's in the chat room right now. Hi, everybody in the chat room right now.
Woohoo!
One former weekly activity that the ACA used to have was Godless Gamers, which is a weekly gathering to play board games, card games, and so on. That is currently on hiatus on account of it doesn't have a host. So if we have any local Austinites, ACA members, or potential ACA members who are interested in hosting that event weekly at your home... send an email to antics@io.com. I'll take care of it. Okay, so we got some mail. Some listener mail this week.
Oh, yeah.
Ron from Bloomington, Indiana writes, "Thank you for the podcasts. I really enjoy your shows. It's nice to have a group of people with the same philosophy about religion and atheism. I lost my religion like many people. I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church, but never really believed, only went through the motions, like Matt." Matt, is that what you did? Did you never actually believe, but just go through the motions?
He just
you
made motions. Believed. He didn't actually say anything. He just did motions.
That's not really a good description of the position I was in. I definitely believed.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
There was a period of time where I was probably more going through the motions and everything else, but you know, there's no doubt that I held, you know, real, actual beliefs about that.
And that's all right. We won't hold it against you. Finally, going on with Ron here. "Finally, I quit and searched for people like you. I've found a home." Okay, but no snoozing in the chat room, right?
Right.
It's a public venue.
Join us in our refrigerator box.
Yeah.
That's right.
keep up the Atheist Experience and the nonprofits. And the nonprofits, Matt. I'm sorry, Atheist and the Atheist Experience, I mean. Durr. Matt being the host of the Atheist Experience.
Yeah.
Ron listens to that one, too. "Keep it up so I can enjoy your company as I drive."
Wow.
So he's bringing his iPod thingy in the car.
I can only imagine.
Well, that's why we started the show. Ron was for you. Andy writes, "I'm a very big fan of the show. I've been listening since show number 11, which was recorded back in February of 2002.
God, we're still doing this?
We have a minor technical issue. It seems
Oh boy, now what?
Free Thought Radio
went away again?
It is broadcasting an old show.
Ah, crap.
So we've got people in the chat room talking about how Jeff's not here, but Mary is here talking. So
that's a real old show.
Yeah, I remember that. That's a really old show.
Andy so probably remembers that show.
Yes.
So there are people hopping over to Direct Connect right now, and I'll keep you
updated.
Good. And can we possibly contact Free Thought Radio and smack them around a bit? Nicely?
Yeah, I'll do what I can. Russell's in the chat room, so he may be able to help out with that.
All right. Getting back to Andy's letter, he says, I rarely get to listen live on Saturday afternoons or join the chat room, but I have downloaded all of your shows since then, which, by the way, is 104 shows!
Whoa!
Taking up over 2 gigabytes on my hard drive! But it's well worth it. Although you primarily do a news show, it is not as disposable as most news shows because of the commentaries, debates, and digressions, which I think could broaden and deepen every atheist's views.
Ooh.
It would be cool if we could make all of the past shows available in an archive for listeners. I agree, Andy. And since you're the guy with all
the two gigabytes
of it, I'll try to get somebody in touch with you. About doing something with all that stuff. Thanks to all of our listeners who wrote in. We can't always answer all of your mail on the air, but we do read every last bit of it.
Yeah, if he's got stuff archived that we don't currently have on the website, he can contact me because Russell's probably too busy to deal with it right now. And I'll see about getting it uploaded and added for, you know, podcasting, et cetera.
And to contact you, where would he send his email?
You can email sans_deity@yahoo.com. sans_deity@yahoo.com.
Okay. Dennis, would you like to start us off with some news?
News?
I'm in a weird mood today. Sorry. you thought last episode with all the voices was weird.
I enjoyed that.
That was the British and New Zealand episode,
the Aussie,
right?
Gosh, let's see. What have we got? Do we do the...
Do whatever one you want. Start wherever you want.
Missouri House?
Oh, God. But no, not that one.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to start that one.
Oh, okay.
I got the earliest story in the
series. All right,
series
so something
that.
Else then.
Yeah, do something else.
All right, let's see.
Missouri. The blow-me state. Sorry.
I like it.
I'm sort of annoyed with Missouri right now.
That'd be very popular. let's see. Americans United criticized Bush for faith-based funding.
Yeah?
Yeah. Church-state watchdog groups... charges that president is undercutting civil rights and civil liberties.
Of course he is.
Well, yes. Americans United for Separation of Church and State today blasted the Bush administration for its relentless effort to steer federal funds to religious organizations, charging that the faith-based initiative undermines civil rights and civil liberties. President George W. Bush renewed his push for the initiative today in a speech in Washington, D.C. A new administration report claims that $2.15 billion in tax aid was directed to faith-based groups for social services during the last fiscal year. Let's see, Reverend... The president seems to have little or no regard for the separation of church and state, said the Reverend Barry W. Lynn, Americans United Executive Director. This initiative clearly rolls back constitutional safeguards and civil rights protections that people count on. Lynn added, Bush persists in claiming that religious charities have a better success rate than governmental and private secular programs. However, there is no proof that this assertion is true. Goes along with the fantasy-based...
In fact, there is some evidence that that's not true.
Oh. Interested in hearing that. It is particularly deplorable...
I'll give you a for instance.
Give us a for instance.
This was a statistic compiled by the Barna Research Group, which is actually that's a right-wing, fundamentalist, Christian research group.
Mm-hmm.
and they gather this information for, you know, to try to fine tune their
right.
their religious behaviors. And there was a inverse correlation between the degree of religious conservatism and the amount of charitable giving. Inverse relationship.
Wow. Okay.
It may be true that liberal Christianity promotes charitable giving.
Right.
So what I don't have is any statistics showing how liberal religious charitable giving compares with, say, atheistic charitable giving.
Right.
I don't have a number there. But that's just saying at the extreme low end of the scale, we don't have figures. But from that point on to the extreme right wing of Christianity, the charitable giving goes down and down and down and down and down. The more seriously people take the religion,
the less likely
they are to actually lift a finger to help anybody else. Because
it goes along with the rule book. I mean,
because you can just pray the problems away, right?
Right.
Or you can simply say that, well, if it's all God's will, so, you know, the hurricane, they meant that God meant for that to kill all those people.
Right.
And meant for all the mess that was left after in the hurricane's wake, right, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so they must have deserved it. Or they automatically deserve it on account of we're all hateful sinners.
Right.
Oh, I need to go off on a tangent here.
Uh-oh.
And I'm going to get into risky territory here again, talking about somebody else's atheist show.
Okay.
Reginald Findlay has his program, the Infidel Guy. Excellent show, great show. And his most recent episode, the most recent one that was podcast.
Right.
Is actually not one of his shows. It's a show called The Way of the Master, which is a Christian radio show where he appeared as guest.
Oh, a guest. Okay.
Yeah. And on that show, there's just I'm not criticizing.
It would be
Reggie. Reggie did an excellent job. Religious. Came off great. But one thing I think got by him, and I want it addressed, because I'm hoping a lot of you listeners out there listen to a lot of these different shows, and here's just a little thing I caught in there that I wanted to comment on. The religious radio commentator guy is trying to convince Reggie that this whole setup where if you break any of the Ten Commandments, you are infinitely evil and deserve to be punished forever.
Right, it's all evil.
It's perfectly fair and just. And here's the example that he used. Right, he said, if you step on a fly, you don't get into any trouble.
Yeah.
If you killed a homeless man, you'd probably get into some trouble, right? But if you assassinated a head of state, you get into really, really serious trouble. And that proves, according to this guy, that we humans already accept the idea that the degree of punishment goes up along with the power of the victim. And that therefore, when you talk about the victim being God, who's infinitely powerful, it's perfectly okay for the punishment to be infinite.
Right.
Pretty much no matter what the infraction is.
Oh, so this...
And now, there is an obvious response to that, and Reggie made it, right?
Yeah.
But what got by him, and what I really, really, really want to freaking comment on, is this guy just said, essentially, that a homeless person has less right to life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has less personal rights than a head of state.
Right. Because his argument is not about the ideal. It's about, how it currently is.
Well, he's saying that because that's the way it currently is,
then it must be right.
Then obviously we already all agree with it, right? But in fact, it is wrong.
Yeah.
Everybody who stops and thinks a minute about this, 10 seconds about this, ought to realize that a human life is a human life, and at least in the West, where we mm-hmm. have, you know, democracy and
supposedly
and you know, individual liberties and freedom and all these other good things
yeah.
we're supposed to stand
yeah,
for,
we're supposed to,
that
yeah.
that while it may be a fact that people who assassinate heads of state get into more trouble,
mm-hmm.
in principle, which ought to be what matters,
right?
In principle, the homeless person's life is worth as much as the life of that head of state.
Right.
So
this guy,
I mean, it
just
seems to me that this, that by using that argument, right, what he is, all the Christian guy has done is expose the fact that he is a freaking savage.
Mm-hmm.
He is a freaking medieval thinking savage. So, all right.
That's a good point.
Just a little help there for you, Reginald. We do love you, man. You do an excellent show. Okay, right. So Sid,
should I finish this?
Yeah, do your thing. I got
okay.
sidetracked.
It is particularly deplorable that Bush boasts about rolling back civil rights protections for government employment. Lynn continued, this initiative lets religious groups run publicly funded programs that openly discriminate in hiring on religious grounds. That's an outrage. Under executive orders issued by the president, tax dollars can go to religious groups to operate social services even if they discriminate in hiring on religious grounds. Thus, taxpayers are being required to pay for programs where they would not be allowed to work or even volunteer.
Uh-huh.
And he adds, I don't think it's coincidental that TV preacher Pat Robertson, a prominent Bush backer, received $1.5 million in faith-based funding, said Lynn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, typical.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, maybe we can do a little back and forth here. I got some good
sure,
news.
What do you
got? It's not good news from the United States. It's, in fact, good news from that haven of personal freedom and liberty.
Oh, yeah, yeah?
Russia.
Ah.
Moscow Duma wants to ban religious healers. The
okay.
Moscow Duma's Committee for Healthcare and Protection of Public Health has proposed strong measures to put a stop to the practices of so-called healers who claim to have religious healing powers.
Cool.
It should be made compulsory for anybody who presents himself as a healer or medical practitioner to prove that he has higher or secondary medical education, demands the committee. All religious attributes should be banned in connection with health care and treatment, and fake healers should not be able to advertise for their practices in the media.
Cool.
Their use of religious attributes has contributed to the rise of occultism among the population, said Ludmila Stebenkova, chairperson of the committee. Many of the so-called healers have opened all kinds of magic shops. They extort money from people without giving real aid and make them leave their illnesses untreated. The Duma committee is presently drafting amendments to the federal law on health care. Strebenkova proposes to establish responsibility for violation of the new rules and to make amendments to the law on advertising to ban advertisements of unscrupulous healers.
Well, that's nice, but
not happening here.
The slogan is, against stupidity, even the gods contend in vain. I wish these guys luck.
Well, I mean, a law is a law.
Yeah,
I'm not
yeah.
saying, obviously, that you make a law, it doesn't completely stop the activity.
Right,
that's not
right.
what it's about. It's about discouraging it, right?
Yeah, well, is the law there in place?
I don't know.
That's the thing, yeah. Can they get it in place?
Well, I think maybe they can.
I hope so.
What do you got? Matt, you want to do one?
Well, sure, I could do one. I have actually got one that I didn't tell you about because I've kind of
Ooh.
Forgotten.
Surprise news!
A stealth news!
The following message has not been approved by Jeff. I don't approve this message. I wanted to do this because I love to pick on Falwell every chance I get.
Oh, yes, please.
He's now being billed by many as a Christian Zionist. because he has changed his position on Jews. After many years of saying unbelievable things about, just rude things about Jews in general, like a lot of other Christians, he has now been convinced that Jews do not have to accept Jesus as their Savior to go to heaven, that as God's chosen people, they have a special road to heaven, and Christians are fucking furious. Whoa. He has basically overturned all of Christian dogma of Jesus being the one and only way to heaven and saying, you know, these are God's special people and they have their own way to heaven.
Hey, so, well, now you
religion
say,
is a game. Everyone makes up their own rules.
Sure, I mean, you know, the Catholics got rid of purgatory and now, you know, Falwell's saying, hey, you don't really have to believe in Jesus if your mom was a Jew.
And you say Christians are up in arms, but which Christians? What segment of the Christian community? Because I know there's liberal Christians who never had an issue with this in the first place, right? It seems to me like an obvious ploy to steal supporters away from Pat Robertson, who's gotten into a lot of trouble.
He's losing ground, I think, among what would normally have been his base, which would be fundamentalists.
Okay.
For these people, the Bible and the dogma of Christianity, which has survived over all this time, it's not subject to change, and definitely, I mean, these people laugh when the Pope changes Catholic dogma, because, you know, he just doesn't have that authority. It doesn't matter what the Pope says. If Catholics happen to believe he's God's mouthpiece, for Protestants, especially fundamentalists, what the Pope says doesn't amount to a hill of beans. And whether he comes out and changes his mind on something and changes all of Catholic dogma doesn't matter. And for Falwell to essentially be doing what the Pope does all the time and saying, you know, I've given this some thought and I've spoken to some Jews and we've come to the decision that Jews don't have to accept Jesus. They've got their own special. That type of stuff just doesn't fly among fundamentalists.
Wow.
Because you are now denying the authority and divinity of Jesus, where the New Testament is clear that there's one way and one way only, and, you know, why would Jesus have had to come to die for anybody's sins? And plus, it raises all of the conflicts which already exist in the New Testament, where Jesus says, hey, I only came to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. I only came to Jews. Do not preach to Gentiles. And then later, that is changed to go preach to everybody in the world. But the problem is that one of the changes is in Mark 16, I think, from verse 9 through 20, is the go out and preach to everybody and handle snakes and heal people. That doesn't exist in the oldest manuscripts. So there's all these little contradictions which are now coming back up because Falwell's decided, hey, you know, we can do a special, you know, dispensation or whatever for Jews.
Uh-huh.
So
just to recap, a lunatic who believes in an invisible friend that he used to think would send all of this, all people that believed in that invisible friend a slightly different way to hell, has now changed his mind, and now he thinks it's okay for those other people to believe in his invisible friend in a slightly different way and not go to his imaginary hell.
It's okay for them to completely deny
that
Jesus was the Son of God. They have their own route to heaven. But I saved the best for last.
Oh, there's more?
Uh-oh.
In addition to changing his position on Jews, Falwell has also... We're talking about the former head of the Moral Majority, was neither, by the way.
Yes, and?
Spent a lot of time...
What, abortion fighting, is okay now?
No, but Falwell
Evolution.
Favors gay rights.
Whoa!
What the hell? Really?
Including the right of homosexuals to teach young children.
Shut up!
Whoa!
I don't want... Don't be making me have to say nice things about this guy.
I'm never going to say a nice thing about him, but... or at least I don't think it's likely.
Wow!
That's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot
exactly did he say about gay rights? Do you have a quote? Direct quote?
The only semi-quote is that he supports gay rights, including the right of homosexuals to teach young children.
What is the temperature of hell right now? I'm curious. Is it below zero?
I think it's dropping.
Damn.
Yeah, I can. Basically, the Anti-Defamation League, or sorry, after a career spent as a right-wing moral crusader and Zionist shill, Jerry Falwell has obeyed the latest orders from the Anti-Defamation League and rejected the Christian gospel, according to fellow Israeli firster and televangelist John Hagee. Falwell now reportedly believes that Jews, as God's supposed chosen people, do not have to be saved through faith in Christ, overturning the most basic and fundamental Christian doctrine. The shocking theological contortion follows Falwell's earlier line switch on homosexuality. As reported here, Falwell, who built his reputation as founder of the Moral Majority on fighting homosexuality and other morals, now supports gay rights, including the right of homosexuals to teach children.
Okay,
this
wait.
Sounds kind of weird, because without any direct quotes from Falwell, it sounds like somebody's interpreting what he's saying.
My first question is, who is writing this, and what is their agenda?
I got this from several different sources through the week, and it was compiling
all
a list.
The same story.
What does Falwell say?
There isn't actually a quote from Falwell.
For the first time in my life, I'm actually interested in what that big fat windbag has to say for himself.
One of the early reports was that he went to a conference with some friends of his, one of them being a liberal Christian and one of them being a Jew, and they had been discussing...
Falwell, a Christian and a Jew, going to a conference.
They had been discussing this particular issue of Jewish salvation for a number of years.
Yeah.
And Falwell had staunchly said, nope, Jesus is the only way.
Yeah.
Evidently, recently... he switched his position and said, okay, I see what you're saying.
But he hasn't made any public statement on it.
As far as I know, there isn't a public statement from him.
I need to hear it from him.
Yeah, see, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, I've told everybody the story of my mom, the preacher, who is aware of this, the Jesus Conference, which was a bunch of biblical scholars that studied the New Testament and tried to pick out the bits of, like, quotes from Jesus in the New Testament that they thought might actually be true, be actual quotes, and they didn't find many. And she's aware of this, and I asked her, do you tell your flock? And she said, no, because they're not ready to hear it. And they're not ready to hear it attitude is pervasive among religious leaders.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I guess it's surprising that it's Falwell, but what's not surprising is to hear about any religious leader possessing more elevated, rational, knowledgeable views, but not telling their
flock,
their parish about it. Parishioners, that's the word I was looking for.
Keep them ignorant.
Yeah, boy. Well, I'd sure like
Sounds
to...
interesting. I want to hear it from Falwell's mouth.
I'd sure like an admission from Falwell. Okay. I'll do and wait a minute. That was you. Well, back to you, Dennis.
No.
It's my turn?
Yeah, your
my
turn. What do you got?
Well, I'll do the Missouri thing.
Okay. Start that.
A lawmaker who signed on to a resolution affirming Christianity as the state of Missouri's majority religion said he isn't trying to turn Missouri into a theocracy. He just wants Christians to feel free to publicly express their faith.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, the way you're going about trying to... allow free Christians to feel free to publicly express their faith. It's by passing a resolution which recognizes Christianity as the official majority religion. And it goes farther than that. I've got the actual text of the resolution here, which I'll read in a bit. But, you know, if Christians don't feel free to publicly express their faith, it's not because of persecution against them.
Right.
It's because Christianity is freaking stupid. And it's getting to the point
where
enough people are aware of that when you open your fat trap and start saying this nonsense publicly and you get laughs or finger pointing or funny looks, that's just to be expected.
Yeah.
Representative Barney Fisher, Republican, said in an interview that the recently filed resolution was met with a wave of backlash from critics who, he said, have distorted the resolution's intent. They feel minority rights have been threatened, which they haven't, Fisher said. They feel we're trying to create a state religion, which would be impossible to do. Some people feel threatened by this. Well, it is technically accurate that
right.
this resolution
it's
does not
resolution.
Does not call. First of all, it's the only
it's
resolution,
not a
not
law,
and it does not call for a single monolithic
right.
state religion. However, what it does do is it singles out Christianity for recognition as the majority religion, as if
right.
a resolution was necessary in order to recognize a bald fact.
Fact. Yeah, what the hell? Why bring it up?
And it goes further, and I'll get to the actual resolution in a bit here. In a recent email to one of his constituents, Fisher wrote that he fully understood that controversy would surround the resolution because, quote, today, uttering the words Christianity or Christ in public draws all manner of scorn and labels. Yeah, because you're a freaking idiot, and you're making a fool of yourself.
And you're trying to destroy our rights.
Well, I'm just talking about uttering the words
yeah.
Christianity and Christ in public.
Yeah.
If there is public derision when you say those things, the reason is not that there's some law against you have to overturn.
Right.
The reason is you're a retard. No offense to people with actual mental problems. I have truly enjoyed... Now we'll see his true colors.
Yes.
I have truly enjoyed watching the liberal element of our state and nation come out squalling like scalded dogs in protest, being forced to unmask their watered-down Christian views, wrap themselves in the Constitution, and try to justify the view that the will of a minority should trump the will of the majority. Okay, let's deconstruct this entire paragraph. First, I've got it. I'm going to read that at the end.
So many ignorant opinions stacked on top
yeah.
of each other.
First, there's just the
insult
of, you know, scalded dogs
yeah.
for liberals. I mean, that's not called for. I called you a retard. You want to call me a scalded dog, you go right ahead. But a lot of people who are objecting to this, right, who
yeah.
are public figures and in politics, are not calling him names, and he's got no call to be doing that to them. Being forced to unmask their water-dried-down Christian views. Now, here is true colors.
They're not real Christians.
Right. His objection to them is that they're not as Christian as him.
Right.
Wrap themselves in the Constitution. You know, if you're going to freaking wrap
yourself
in something in this nation, that should be
that
it.
That is the thing.
And try to justify the view that the will of the minority should trump the will of the majority. Excuse me, sir.
That is what the Constitution says.
Yes, what the Constitution is for.
Yes.
My wife has an excellent little phrase, right? There's a catchphrase, democracy is two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner.
Right.
Right? That people have said that for a long time. My wife
yeah.
adds, the Constitution is the piece of paper that says it's not going to be the sheep.
Right.
That is where the rights of the minority trump the will of the majority
right.
to crap all over those rights.
We live in a constitutional democracy, not
yes.
a simple democracy.
Yeah.
And the Constitution says, no, sorry, you can't have a tyranny of the majority. You just
yes.
can't.
Critics of the resolution charge that it is the first in a string of attempts to make Christianity
uh-huh.
a dominating force in Missouri politics and schools.
Exactly. Otherwise, why bring it up?
Quote, yeah, because, you know, majorities don't need to be
right.
defended.
Right.
Protected. They
They're
just
the
don't need
majority.
It. They're the majority.
Yeah, and whether or not you're the majority religion is just a matter of fact and numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't need any kind of document to proclaim it. But there's actual language in there. I think we
yeah.
know what the
I'm
real meaning
is. I'm going to get to it in a minute.
Yeah.
This is a cynical attempt by a certain faction of politicians to utilize religion to divide the people of Missouri along religious lines during an election year, said Brett Shirk, executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Kansas and Western Missouri. It essentially asks legislators to vote on whether they believe in God and whether they think that the Christian version of God should be ratified as the state religion of Missouri. Shirk said, the ACLU supports a student's right to voluntarily pray in schools, and that the ACLU would defend students if their right to pray was being hindered. It's one more attempt to create a theocracy, Shirk said in a phone interview. But despite the views of opponents, the resolution's sponsor, Representative David Saster, Republican, is keeping quiet. He declined to comment Tuesday on his measure. A House resolution is not a bill and therefore cannot become a law. Representative Marilyn Roostman, Republican, said House resolutions are largely symbolic, simply reflecting the opinion of lawmakers who sign on to them. She said they usually don't carry much consequence.
Great, let's get rid of them.
Fisher wrote in an email to another constituent that the resolution does not breach the constitutional divide between church and state, since it does not establish a state religion. Okay, then maybe I should cut in and read the text of the thing now, because I'm just sick of this. House Concurrent Resolution Number 13. Lucky Resolution Number 13. 93rd General Assembly, whereas our forefathers of this great nation of the United States recognized a Christian God and used the principle afforded to us by him as the founding principles of our nation, and...
First of all,
they're wrong. This is just a lie.
That's a lie.
Well, it may be a weasel.
But it's some a blanket did. Statement, yeah. And it's not true, therefore it's a lie. Some of our forefathers, possibly even a majority of our forefathers, which of course would be all this guy needs in order to feel justified, were Christians. But many of our forefathers, including some of the most famous and most influential
ones,
were deists and didn't recognize Christian God at all.
And... anytime anybody proposed that God or Christ or Christianity be added to the wording of the Constitution at all,
he
was voted out every time.
Yep.
We specifically voted God out of the Constitution.
Also, notice the bait and switch here. It talks about the forefathers recognizing a Christian God. Then it talks about the forefathers using the principles afforded to us by him, capital H, meaning God. So, first they say the Founding Fathers recognized there was a God. Then it goes on to make the assumption that there is such a God and that he gave us the founding principles of our nation.
Right.
Yeah, like the Ten Commandments, of which barely three are
poof,
laws.
Suddenly a God is concocted here.
Guys, let's go on, because that's only the first whereas. Whereas, as citizens of this great nation, we, the majority, also wish to exercise our constitutional right to acknowledge our Creator.
We, the majority?
We, the majority, also wish to exercise our constitutional right to acknowledge our Creator and give thanks for the many gifts provided by Him. Once again, we're now off the subject of, you know, just historically what the Founding Fathers did, and we're deeply into, we believe in this God, and we're passing a resolution that, you know...
We're passing a resolution that assumes His existence.
Yes. And, by the way, there's no challenge to their constitutional right to acknowledge their Creator.
No!
They just can't use the power of government to back it up. That is what they cannot do, and that's what they are treating as a constitutional attack on their constitutional rights, but it's not. They are attacking the Constitution itself. Interesting, by the way, that this first nitwit, Barney Fisher, Republican of Missouri, attacked liberals for wrapping themselves in the Constitution, whereas, in the second whereas of the resolution, it refers to constitutional rights that they're supposedly trying to protect.
Right. He's wrapping himself in the Constitution, little dipshit.
Yeah, this resolution wraps itself in the Constitution, so where does he get off
Complaining about liberals.
Complaining about liberals wrapping themselves in the Constitution. They should. It's just when the liberals do it, they're accurate.
Right.
Whereas, as elected officials, we should protect the majority's right to express their religious beliefs while showing respect for those who object.
Whoa!
As elected officials, you don't need to protect the majority's rights particularly. Certainly not when their rights are really not being challenged, like they're not being challenged
right
now. The rights that they have are the rights that they have. This bullshit about them being not being protected is in fact the majority doesn't recognize the limitations on their own rights, and they're trying to make a resolution to officially claim that they have more rights than the Constitution actually affords them. Why, and this while showing respect for those who object? Where is the respect for those that object, Mr. Barney Fisher, who's attacking the left-wingers for their watered-down Christian views?
And what
where
kind of
is
dogs,
the
Barney?
Respect? Huh?
What kind of dog,
oh, yeah,
Barney?
Excuse me, and a scalded dog.
Scalded dogs, yeah, respect
that,
you.
Uh-huh.
Fucking lying sack of shit.
There's the respect for opposing views that you're claiming that uh-huh this resolution is
yeah
meant to support.
Yeah.
And finally, whereas we as elected officials recognize that a greater power exists above and beyond the institution of mankind. So
no.
So they're trying to resolve God
into
existence.
Existence, yeah. And oh boy, if this gets passed, then all the Christians get to point at it.
I don't know if it's been passed yet or
like,
not.
Shit.
I don't know if it's been passed yet or not. So here's the wrap up. That's all the whereases. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the members of the House of Representatives of the 93rd General Assembly, second regular session, the Senate concurring therein, that we stand with the majority of our constituents and exercise the common sense that voluntary prayer in public schools and religious displays on public property are not a coalition of church and state, but rather the justified recognition of the positive role that Christianity has played in this great nation of ours, the United States of America.
Right.
You know, you can't just resolve that into existence either. There have been constitutional challenges. This has gone to the Supreme Court. The prayer in school thing is a done deal. I'm sorry if you don't like it. But prayer organized by government-operated schools is unconstitutional. The
yeah
government cannot be the instrument of promoting your fucking stupid-ass religion. So.
Now, I have a couple of things here that dovetail with this a little bit.
I have more.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Let's go ahead. Yeah, let's go ahead with yours. This is
okay.
More. It's more of the same.
Here's some weird. The
yeah,
Reverend.
Wait. Yes, Matt.
Oh,
I, thanks to Russell, got information about the Falwell thing.
Yeah.
On March 1st.
Why don't we? But now we're in the middle of Dennis's story. Let's do go back to Falwell after we're done here with this one.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Hey, somebody's got to get interrupted. Let's.
The Reverend David M. Greenhaw, president of Eden Theological Seminary in St. Louis, said he found the resolution offensive as a Christian. I don't want the state defining my Christianity. But, sir, I'm sorry, I guess you're just not a real Christian.
Yeah,
like
you
this
got
other
the watered
clown
down Christian views,
right,
you scalded dog.
Some non-Christians also reacted strongly. Batya Abrusim Goldstein, executive director of the Jewish Community Relations Council, you could figure, said the fact that the resolution made it out of a committee was significant. It's not that this is one individual's opinion, he said. Other legislators have voted on this already, so it takes on a legitimacy that makes it more than a resolution. It's painful for faith communities outside the Christian community.
Yeah.
And, of course, then, you know, they go on with more.
Does anybody in the chat room maybe know whether this has passed yet or not? Because we don't know.
Oh,
and, Matt,
man,
please go on with a Falwell update.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, Russell did some digging.
Yeah,
cool.
Instead of studying.
Right. You know, you just could have brought your ass down to the show, Russell.
I don't think he can hear us. I think he's only in chat room.
Maybe. All right.
But on March 1st, 2006, there was a news post on Jerry Falwell Ministries' website,
yeah,
which reads, "Earlier today, reports began circulating across the globe that I have recently stated that Jews can go to heaven without being converted to Jesus Christ. This is categorically untrue." These false reports originated from a March 1st Jerusalem Post front page column which said an evangelical pastor and Orthodox rabbi, both from Texas, have apparently persuaded leading Baptists, blah, 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 blah. He goes on to say that while he's a strong supporter of Israel and dearly loves the Jewish people and believes them to be the chosen people of God, he continues to stand on the foundational biblical principle that all people, Baptists, Methodists, Pentecostal, Jews, Muslims, etc., must believe in the Lord Jesus Christ in order to enter heaven. The interesting thing about this is that the news item has been, his denial that I'm reading from, completely removed from the Jerry Falwell's ministry website. Now, this was something he posted on March 1st. It has been scrubbed, and the only way we could get to it was from a Google cache. So, somebody claims that Falwell's changed his position. He comes out and says, "No, I didn't," and then completely deletes his denial, so that it doesn't exist anywhere but a cache. So,
WTF.
We have basically no clue.
We'll stay on this story.
Which I suppose puts us pretty much in the same group as Falwell.
Yeah.
Wow,
oh,
interesting.
So, if the original story was wrong, then I apologize for spreading misinformation. Although I'm kind of curious. He's come under fire before for saying things against Jews. Like, he's preached continually that the Antichrist will be a Jew, which, of course, pisses off Jews. And, you know, the principle that everybody must be saved by Jesus to go to heaven, and these reports that he's changed his mind, and then his denial of the reports, and then now that denial has gone missing. Who the fuck knows? I'm
tempted to speculate who the fuck cares.
Yeah.
If
you guys can't get your religion sorted out, how do you expect anybody else to?
Right. It shouldn't be our business to have to go weed through your little vague comments and denials and things and try to put together what you think. Just say what the fuck you think. And, you know, I'm back on the subject again of I have personal familiarity with preachers making a practice of not telling their own parishioners what they actually think, what they actually know. They're consciously deceiving people. So even if Falwell did say that, he's not going to tell his followers, because it would get him into trouble. That's why there was a denial.
Yeah.
God. CFI events calendar, May 28 to June 4.
Whoa.
Skeptics and secular humanists will be joining the Center for Inquiry for an exclusive cruise experience to Alaska. The theme is, for CFI's Alaskan Explorer, is planetary ethics. For information or to make reservations, call CFI Florida at 800-394-7571. Email cruise@cfiflorida.org or visit www.cfitravel.org. March 31st to April 1st, the 30th anniversary of the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, PSYCOP, and the inauguration of the Center for Inquiry building will take place on Saturday, April 1st, at the Center for Inquiry in Amherst, New York. For information, contact Barry Carr at area code 716-636-1425, extension 217, or email bcarr@centerforinquiry.net. That's bcarr@centerforinquiry.net.
And we hope this isn't some sort of April 1st hoax, so go ahead.
I don't know. I hope so. On March 19, the ACA lecture will feature our own Matt Dillahunty. Matt, take a bow on radio.
I'm bowing. Believe me, I'm bowing.
You will be speaking on the history of the biblical canon. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's actually
this big gun.
That's kind of just the title of it.
it's going to go through the, I'm going to have a little bit of historical perspective, and then a quick touch on the Old Testament canon, because that's really not that big of a deal, it turns out. Talk a little bit about the New Testament canon, the politics, and the dogmatic fights that went on around it,
about
what
how
got left aside, and why we should give a shit about any of this.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
You want me to just
tell
you right now?
Well,
how long would it take?
I assume you have a full hour of talk material prepared.
The lecture's like 45 minutes. The reason, one of the best reasons that I came up with, and the reason why this is significant to me is, if the Bible is true and reliable, then you have some basis for argument that Christianity has some support. If you find that the Bible is unreliable, then automatically you've knocked the legs out from underneath Christianity. My biggest reason for wanting to know about things like the canon is if a Christian comes up to me and says, well, why don't you believe the Bible? I want a better answer than just, well, you know, we don't know who wrote it. It's I don't think it's reliable, blah, blah, blah. If you can actually provide real facts showing, hey, they voted on this and they voted on this and there's this contradiction and this didn't get it in, you know, things like that, then you have not only an answer that supports your belief, but forces them to question their own.
Good. That's a good argument.
Not bad.
By the way, I picked up a copy of Daniel Dennett's new book.
Yes?
The name of which is... The subtitle of which is Religion as a Natural Phenomenon.
Okay.
And it's... I keep getting it confused with somebody else's book, Unweaving the Rainbow, which I think was Dawkins. Anyway.
I can't help you.
Anyway, the... I've listened to a bunch of interviews with Dennett about this new book, where basically his thing is, you know, let's look at this the activity we call religion, try to figure out what where it comes from, why it exists, how it adapts and changes over time, and what its actual effects are, and treat it like, you know, a real thing, instead of saying, well, we can't talk or think about that because it's magical.
Right.
And his ultimate conclusion, I mean, when asked in interviews what he would like to see happen next, he wants religious education classes in public schools. But classes in the history and, you know, and beliefs of the religions rather than indoctrination in a particular religion.
Right, right. I've been saying that for years.
And there is a sense to that. Mm-hmm. I mean...
I took a one.
But, the possibility for abuse is astonishing.
There's that, but you know, to me personally, I just remember being in high school and having trouble understanding why, you know, things like algebra are relevant to me.
Right.
And,
right.
And in algebra, you can make a real good argument about how, you know, there's chances that you'll wind up in careers where you need to know how to do some freaking math.
Yes, I.
But when we get to religion, it's not that I'm arguing that it's not a good idea. I'm saying I can easily see how students would have difficulty understanding the relevance.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of things like that, though. Anything
that's true.
I just remember I was only able to take a one-semester course on comparative religions. It was pretty simple. It didn't cover a lot.
Yeah.
But... And at the time, of course, I was a fundamentalist Christian, so I shrugged it off.
Right.
But I still remember that class, and I think that, although I didn't recognize it at the time, it was very important to me being able to critically question my own beliefs, knowing that other beliefs existed. If you have a we're in a country with 80% Christian majority. If you don't expose people to alternate beliefs, even as just a cursory examination, there's a very real chance that they may growing up believing that, you know, hey, everybody believes what I believe,
everybody
and anybody who doesn't is probably crazy or, you know, evil.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand the argument. It makes sense. Here's a weird brain fart that I had driving down the highway this morning. I was driving down the road, and I saw a dead possum by the side of the road.
Yeah.
And just for some reason, the thought occurred to me what it would look like if there was a tiny, tiny, tiny little cross set up by that dead possum. And then there was a dead armadillo. And I thought, man, this could catch on.
Hey,
but I don't know where I'm going with this,
I don't know.
Something Matt just said has tweaked my memory of this crazy thought.
That's bizarre.
There's,
I have a question for you. What do you pull to have a brain fart? Sorry.
Okay, good question. I do not know the answer to that. But it's things like religious education classes. This is sort of the flip side of my previous sort of, you know, cautionary concern. They almost seem to, like, drag the religion down to some, like, level of reality. Drag it into the real world where it can be, like, boring like everything else.
Right.
Sort of maybe dilute it. Or I really don't know where I'm going with these thoughts. I'm sorry.
See, and I'm hardly a good person to judge this because I have what would probably be termed as almost a perverse fascination with religion. And I spend an unbelievable amount of hours each week studying religion, various religions, what their beliefs are, and then all of the issues that surround those beliefs, you know, touching on philosophy. It's just,
I can't get enough.
But that is healthy because that's like, you know, you've got a hobby, man. You have a fascination with that stuff as on the level of a hobby like somebody who collects stamps.
Right, but can you imagine what the textbook would be like for that? I mean,
well, there already are comparative religion textbooks.
Yeah, what do you mean? Why would it be awful? Why don't you tell us what
textbooks
what's in?
Usually just sap
I never got
the interest
I'm,
out of everything.
Oh, I see. What were they like?
I think the biggest problem with that course was that it was a single semester where you try to cram in as much about a variety of religions as possible.
Uh-huh.
So what you basically get is a couple pages about Jewish history, a couple pages about Christian history, a couple pages about Hindus.
And you don't really learn much of anything about
and
anything.
And you basically just get the basics of belief. There's not a much comparison, and there's certainly no critical examination as to the value of belief. And I don't think that you'd ever see that in a high school course.
Right, couldn't.
But as a primer to maybe pique somebody's interest to look into these more when they go to college or whatever, I got to favor that. As a semester elective especially, anything along those lines I'm usually in favor of. Now, the Texas Freedom Network had that story about the Bible course that they were trying to introduce in Texas did introduce in a couple places. And that, to me, is an example of an idea of trying to have a non-proselytizing study of a particular religion as an elective go horribly wrong. I mean, because the book, was about the Bible, but it's got a flag on the cover of the textbook. And there's all of these references in there about Christianity in the United States and being the foundation of laws and blah, blah. I mean, I did a whole TV show on and didn't even get through half of what was wrong with that book.
Yeah, right. So a textbook that really did the job properly would probably not be acceptable to most religious people.
Oh, absolutely not.
Well, I remember having to sign a permission slip to take the class.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an elective, and it was a comparative religions class, and it was one semester, but I had to get a permission slip signed to take it. And I didn't, you know, I don't remember that much about it. It's been 20-some-odd years
ago.
Did
you have any trouble getting that permission slip signed?
Nope.
Hmm. Okay. Cool. So, Matt will be speaking on the subject of the history of the biblical canon on March 19th here in Austin, Texas, at the Austin History Center at 9th and Guadalupe. A rally for free expression will be held in Trafalgar Square in London on Saturday, March 25th, between 2 and 4 p.m. The statement of principles published by the organizers of the rally reads, "The strength and survival of free society and the advance of human knowledge depend on the free exchange of ideas. All ideas are capable of giving offense, and some of the most powerful ideas in human history, such as those of Galileo and Darwin, have given profound religious offense in their time. The free exchange of ideas depends on freedom of expression, and this includes the right to criticize and mock. We assert and uphold the right of freedom of expression and call on our elected representatives to do the same. For more details on the March for Free Expression, visit marchforfreeexpression.blogspot.com.
Wow, I like that statement.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
They really know how to put words together over there in England.
What language do they speak over there?
They speak some squirrely version of English.
Yeah, some watered-down
version.
They speak
American over there.
That's a watered-down version of American. The 32nd Annual National Convention of American Atheists will take place at the Marriott River Center in San Antonio, Texas, April 14 to 16. Hundreds of atheists from throughout the nation will attend this three-day event, which includes a program of informative speakers, leadership training seminars, social events, and much more. There will also be a Sunday morning forum formal debate. They've got a fundamentalist creationist guy in there to debate. For more information, visit www.atheists.org/convention. Scouting for All rally slash protest and candlelight vigil. Scouting for All will be holding a protest rally and candlelight vigil at the Boy Scouts of Scouts of America's annual national conference. This year, the conference is being held in Washington, D.C. on May 24th through 26th. For more information, visit www.scoutingforall.org. The 4th International Rationalist Conference is scheduled to be held on December 26 to 29 in New Delhi, India. For more information, visit conference@rationalistinternational.net. If you are in our listening audience know of any events or groups or websites that you think deserve mention on our show, please let us know by emailing nonprofits@atheist-community.org.
And also, if you happen to attend any of these events, especially ones we wouldn't be able to get to like the ones in India, send us an email. Let us know how it went. Tell us what went on at the
these
conventions.
Would you like to do another bit of news there, Matt?
Sure.
Seems to be your turn again.
We've got NASA.
NASA.
Probably found water on one of Saturn's moons.
How many planets now? Or let's expand that to
stellar bodies.
Stellar bodies that we found water on so far. Right?
I don't know.
There is water on the moon. They found that.
Yeah.
There's water on Mars. It's in the form of ice. Are we going to narrow this down to liquid water?
No. Well, yeah, they've got geysers
of liquid water.
The general theory is that there's volcanic activity because the surface is iced over, and there's volcanic activity well below the surface, which is heating up the water and causing the geysers to.
And what's neat is it explains an observation they made previously that
they
didn't know the explanation for.
The amount of oxygen.
Molecular oxygen around Saturn. They didn't know where it came from.
Absolutely.
It's a dissociation of the water molecules. So.
The Cassini probe, of course, has discovered this. There's talk, and it's all extremely preliminary, actually taking a look at getting something down below the surface.
Right.
To find out if there's life down there, because all of the ingredients for microbial life exist from their observations, there's no reason to believe that it's not at least possible that you could go down there and find microbial life. So, who knows? I mean, I doubt, we're going to run across sea monsters and mermaids, but the small stuff.
Oh, well, then what's the point?
Hey, and there'll be chances that they're nice. Here's another story. Altruism built in humans.
Huh?
Infants as young as
What's
18 months.
What's in that story for me, though, Jeff?
Oh, altruism is its own reward. sorry.
I like that.
Infants as young as 18 months show altruistic behavior, suggesting humans have a natural tendency to be helpful, German researchers have discovered. In experiments reported in the journal Science, toddlers helped strangers complete tasks such as stacking books. Young chimps did the same.
Stacked books?
Yes, providing the first direct evidence of altruism in non-human primates. Altruism may have evolved 6 million years ago in the common ancestor of chimps and humans, the study suggests.
That's not possible. The Earth's only about 8,000 or 9,000 years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is the first experiment showing altruistic helping towards goals in any non-human primate. It's been claimed chimpanzees act mainly for their own ends, but in our experiments, there was no reward and they still helped.
Cool.
So, yeah. I think that's where morals come from.
But, these hardline...
Oh, there was an interesting note in the study that the kids were able to discern the difference between an item dropped on purpose and dropped accidentally. And if you specifically set the thing down, they wouldn't pick it up and hand it back to you. But if they thought it was an accident and you had accidentally dropped it, they'd pick it up and help. So, that's what helped further define that this was altruism and not just, hey, I'm doing this robotic behavior.
Right.
Yeah, but, I've had enough arguments with hardline objectivist types who will insist that even if there's an instinct to help others, it's driven by feeling good when you do it, and so it's still you.
I don't have a problem with that, though.
No.
Well, but when that argument is used to then to justify doing away with altruism, to attack altruism, then it's just a self-serving.
Yeah, I had recent discussions about morality and where it comes from and what justification can you make for any kind of morality, and I'm like, even if you went for a purely selfish position of I'm only out for me, there are real arguments to be made that helping others, even if it doesn't immediately directly benefit me, could be as simple as I'm propagating a meme within society that helping others is good, which may eventually come back to help me. And
absolutely,
we don't know for sure that this is, we're finding evidence that altruism, maybe genetic, along with a lot of other behaviors.
Well, and this study that Dennis just cited does exactly that. If little kids are not going to have carefully thought through, if I help that man pick up that thing he looks like he dropped by accident, then I am contributing to a society where in future I may reap the benefits of living in a society like that, right?
Right.
So little kids are not going to think that through. That's an instinct.
Yes.
Right.
I would tend to agree with that. But the thing is that just because you don't specifically think it through, we do things all the time without thinking it through.
But my point of that is that I don't think altruism, I don't think that instinct, in fact, I'm sure Richard Dawkins would argue that you can't point at that instinct and say that's evidence that altruism is good for the individual, because it's freaking not the evolution that would have led to that instinct isn't about the individual other than helping them survive long enough to have kids.
Right.
It's about the passing on of the genes. Personally, I would rather say, screw these freaking instincts that we've inherited. There is really a practical value for us as individuals, whether we evolved these instincts for our own personal benefit or for the benefit of our genes so that they can reproduce. Whether whether it came from that or not is irrelevant to the question of whether we want to embrace the practice of altruism or not.
One of the best things about, one of the things we perceive as being best about human and having evolved an intelligence and everything is that we have the ability to overcome our instincts, consciously work to fight our own instincts for the betterment of ourselves
and society.
Sometimes
that's damn important. I'm betting we may have gotten some feedback on this topic in the chat room. No?
It's possible.
Nope.
If we did, then. If we do, then let me know. Okay. Yeah, the point I want to make is that there are people who will look at arguments like, it's an evolved instinct, therefore it really is ultimately for our own benefit. They don't understand evolution. Or they'll argue that being altruistic really is for personal gain, and And then I think they're just missing the point. I think that you can't, it's like those morons who interpret quantum physics to mean that us looking at stuff controls what happens.
Right.
Right? It's, yeah, there's a fucking human being involved in the situation. There can't not be, otherwise there's not one of us there to even see what's going on. But to say that because there's a human being involved, that therefore they have the power to change reality through quantum physics, or that therefore they're, because they, you know, there are long-term, long-sighted possible benefits from being altruistic in general, that therefore it's all about personal greed, I think just misses the point. It's just, that's just trying to cut off the altruistic behavior from all other human considerations so they can dispense with it.
Did you actually watch that What the Bleep Do We Know?
No.
No.
Oh, don't
even go there.
We don't need to talk about it.
I know
it.
Enough about it. You did watch it?
I've watched it
I'm
twice.
I'm sad for you.
I'm
twice? Why twice?
I watched it the first time just to watch it, and I watched it the second time to take notes on everything that was absolutely asinine and wrong with it.
Wow.
I had originally started working it up because we got asked about it on the TV show several times.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Did
so,
you?
Yeah, so I wanted to have something ready to go for that, but yeah.
Wow.
Let's not talk about that. Do we have more news?
Oh, I suppose we do. Sure, I got one.
Okay, go for it.
Missionaries heading for secular France.
Wow.
Watch out, France. This is a warning from the United States.
Warning.
Missionaries are coming.
Warning.
Leaving Kenya, Zimbabwe, and South Africa behind, France has become the number one target of Britain's Protestant missionaries.
No.
Thus claims the September 2005 issue of Religious Trends, a compilation of Christian statistics. The second position on the list is held by Kenya, which was the top destination of evangelical missionary agencies from 1991 until now. Spain holds third place, advancing up from the eighth position. The survey indicates a major shift in missionary activities from the third world to Europe. Quote, there has been a crisis of confidence in Christianity across Europe, unquote, commented an official of the Christian Mission Society. We are beginning to see Europe as a strategic priority. Yeah, because, like, that's where all the old established religious organizations that you suck off the teat of in order to fund your interference in other people's lives. In France, one of the most secular countries in the world, thanks to its clear separation of church and state, the once so powerful position of the Catholic Church is irrevocably lost, while evangelical churches are traditionally playing a mere marginal role.
Why do I want an applause track right here?
Yeah.
Yay. Sorry.
Evangelical missionaries are trying to identify and fill a Christian vacuum, cashing in on the fear of... get this. Cashing in on the fear of Islamic dominance.
Oh, boy.
So their selling point, their sales strategy is, you've got to join with us and strengthen Christianity, otherwise the Muslims are going to take over.
Oh, boy.
Our religion is the lesser of two evils.
That's right. According to France Mission, the number of practicing Muslims in France is 12 times higher than the number of practicing evangelical Christians. Also in Spain, the rapid loss of privileges of the Catholic Church under the socialist government is encouraging evangelical competition. Another area evangelical Protestant proselytism is trying to till is the ever-growing spiritual zone. France Mission claims that there are currently more mediums and occult practitioners in France than registered physicians. Well, they, you know, the way you address that problem is the way Russia's working on addressing
right.
that problem. Not by trying
fostering
to take
faith.
Like, it doesn't fucking matter. You've got some segment of your population that is doing irrational shit, right? The solution is not to switch them between different kinds of irrational shit. This doesn't accomplish anything.
Let's get rid of the doctors and switch to homeopathy.
That's right. Well, apparently Canada needs these evangelists. Yeah. I think they should all go there and try
Canada.
And try and convert the Sikhs.
What?
See, Canada backs Sikh dagger rights.
Eh?
Garbaj Singh Multani was age 12.
Garbaj?
was age 12 when the controversy erupted. Canadian Sikhs should be allowed to wear small daggers central to their faith when they go to school, the country's Supreme Court has ruled.
What the fuck?
In an 8-0 judgment, the court reversed the ruling of a Montreal school board which banned Gurbaj Singh Multani from wearing his dagger, known as a kirpan. The kirpan is deemed sacred by Sikhs as a symbol of power and truth. School authorities banned the kirpan in 2001 after an objection by a parent concerned about pupil security. Duh. Announcing the judgment, the Supreme Court said that a total ban on kirpans violated the country's Charter of Rights. The charter guarantees total religious freedom within Canada.
Matt, are you and I going to get into a argument about this one again? Usually when these religious freedom right things come up, you tend to, as far as I can tell, you tend to side with the religions that special exemptions need to be made for them because what they're doing is religious.
Well, we're definitely going to get an argument because that's not what I do.
Okay. What is it that you do?
I don't think there should be special exemptions.
Okay.
But what I've argued in the past and what I've, depending on the case, in the countries like United States and more so in Canada, where you have the right to practice your religious beliefs, then laws which unfairly limit your ability to practice are unjust, and they're treated that way by the law.
Well, I agree, but what, you know, how do you define unfairly? It seems to me that if you have a law in place, like, say, no hand-to-hand melee weapons in schools in the hands of children, right?
Right.
When you have a rule like that in place, it is not an unfair intrusion into the religious practice. It is there for a secular purpose, and it's not, you know, and it's not being put in place just to interfere with that religion's practice.
I agree.
Oh.
Yeah, now if you say disallow crosses,
so that
would be unfair.
I would have a problem with these kids carrying the knives to school. I think there are solutions that would allow them to actually carry the knives to school and still be within rules, like
blunt
perhaps
knives?
Having them be blunted, having them welded to the sheath, welded shut, so that they're still able to carry the symbol of their religion, but they can't ever unsheath it.
Right.
You know,
I think that is the right kind of solution that ought to be sought. Not softening laws that are there for secular purposes, to make exemptions for the religious believers, but rather working with the religious believers to find some alternative acceptable to them that that does not violate the law that's in place.
I agree.
Except that you're not going to get Rastafarians to be satisfied with Camel cigarettes. And you're not going to get these Sikhs to be satisfied with anything other than a little dagger they can pull out and wave around as the symbol of their power. You just not, because they're freaking lunatics.
I agree. I mean, you know, if you want to make the claim that your religion allows you to, you know, smack somebody in the face, sorry, you don't get to do that. You know.
Yeah. Indeed, the
I'm a smackafarian.
Atheism post that I got this from was titled, "Gee, can I have a Glock 9mm as my religious symbol?"
I'm a smackafarian. I'm allowed to go around and just hit people. I don't carry a symbol. I'm just free to, you know, bodily, physically assault other people.
Right. Behind this fist is not a chin. It's just.
Yeah, I think there's always a good opportunity for some kind of compromise which allows people to actually practice their stupid little beliefs as they see fit. You know, without putting too much restriction on them to do so. I think that's much in the same way that when we have free speech, you have to tolerate speech you don't agree with and speech
I agree, but you see, it's different. I think this is a fundamentally different kind of thing, because speech doesn't actually physically endanger people.
Oh, I agree. I'm just talking about how you take the good with the bad every time you allow somebody freedom.
Yeah, but I think the freedom ought to be doled out, you know, equally and not have exemptions for certain people. Just
yeah, I'd rather see if they make an exemption for these Sikhs to carry their daggers,
yeah,
that they just make an exemption so that all kids can carry a dagger if they want.
And by the way, and probably more appropriate on the subject of Rastafarians and marijuana, right? I think that that the discussion that ought to take place between the government authorities, the lawmakers, and the religions who might have their doctrinal toes stepped on by the laws should include the possibility of simply rescinding the law.
Right.
Across the board. I think that's perfectly fine. If that religion can make a case that the thing that they do is not really dangerous, then the right answer is rescind the freaking law.
Yeah, we wouldn't be the first country to legalize smoking marijuana.
Right.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, we'd be one of the last.
And, you know, and even given, you know, for me, the drugs issue is not, it's not my issue. I kind of generally think that our drug policy in this country is nuts, but it's not a subject I spend a lot of time on, but I can certainly understand those arguments, but that is how these things ought to be resolved. It's instead we got these two sides in conflict, and rather than either of them backing down, we have one of them make an exception. But by the way, that another possibility for to resolve this issue could have been the Sikhs saying, well, you know, yeah, the little dagger is the symbol of our power, and we're going to decide within our religion that it's not appropriate to carry those in public schools. They could have done that. They could have. There's all kinds of ways that this could be addressed. But
there's certain things,
and
about
that would be the equivalent of the religion making an exemption instead of the lawmakers making an exemption.
Yeah, there's something about, I think that if a religion is looking for a specific exception like this, they have to make a really strong case, not that this is just a part of their religion, but a central, critical, vital part. And I don't know that even in the Sikh religion that not carrying a dagger is the equivalent of apostasy.
You know what? I kind of disagree with you on that point. I don't think that should have anything to do with it.
Well,
because in for the, I think that when lawmakers make exemptions for religious practice on the basis of the fact that, well, this is a really central part of their religion, you know, it shouldn't be any of their freaking business what is or isn't a central part of the religion. It should be their business to make laws that are necessary and to enforce the laws that are necessary, if they're really necessary, or not, if they're not. I don't see how the centralness of the practice makes any freaking difference.
Because
I know it makes a difference to the practitioners, but it's
their right to free practice that we're actually talking about.
Huh.
I think one of the big fears is that somebody will just create a new religion and say, my central theme is that, well
damn right.
We're talking about things that are, in a sense, grandfathered. Once upon a time, every boy had a knife at school in the United States.
Yeah.
I used to carry pocket knives. My dad used to carry pocket knives. My grandpa probably had a buck knife. I mean, you know, these guys had come off the farm and they had knives. And it's not that the knife is dangerous. It's what can be done with it. And there are other issues surrounding whether or not kids should have knives at school, setting aside the complete religious issue. I mean, you know, once upon a time it wasn't a problem at all. Now all of a sudden it's a problem. What changed? And I think, you know, not to dismiss any of the rest of it, but I think that's an issue that needs to be addressed as well. And the only reason that I said anything about what is central to the religion is because that's what the law has established the measurements are going to be in saying this. That's how you determine what is an undue or unfair discrimination.
I'm just going on record once again saying I think that is a totally wrong-headed way of
I agree.
Okay.
I'm just sticking with the law.
Is that amount of time left from the screen accurate?
It is now.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm going to do this other story because
go for it.
I've been meaning to get to this for a while. Our listener Doug sent in a bunch of links to stuff about the Mormons. Oh, dude, I got 3 minutes to do this giant story. What?
Endofuel says that the knife, the kerfin, can only be carried if it's unseen, blunt, and made of wood. Maybe that's why they allowed him to wear it.
Wow. Okay.
I don't have a problem with that.
Go.
Yeah.
All right. Something about the Mormons. Birth defect is plaguing children in FLDS towns. Ah. It's one of the darkest secrets of the Warren Jeffs polygamous community. An especially severe form of birth defect is on the rise and may mushroom in coming generations. I don't want to describe it in too much detail, said Isaac Weiler, who was related by marriage to some of the victims. It's not a real pretty sight. According to experts and former Jeff's followers, the cause of the birth defect is clear. Intermarriage among close relatives is producing children who have two copies of a recessive gene for a debilitating condition called fumarase deficiency. They predict the scale of the problem will increase dramatically in the future. Weiler, who has lived in the polygamist community most of his life, said he expects residents to continue marrying close relatives. Around here, Weiler said, you're pretty much related to everybody. The fumarase deficiency is an enzyme irregularity that causes severe mental retardation, epileptic seizures, and other cruel effects that leave children nearly helpless and unable to take care of themselves. Dr. Theodore Tarby has treated many of the children at clinics in Arizona under contracts with the state. All are retarded. Quote, in the severe category of mental retardation, the neurologist says, which means an IQ down there around 25 or so. Until a few years ago, scientists only knew of 13 cases of fumarase deficiency in the entire world. Tarby says he's now aware of 20 more victims, all within a few blocks of each other on the Utah-Arizona border. According to community historian Ben Bistline, most of the community's 8,000 residents are in two major families descended from a handful of founders who settled there in the 1930s to live a polygamist lifestyle.
Charming. Not having any knowledge of science can't hurt you.
No, not at all.
Can't hurt anyone.
Not at all.
No.
So, whew. There we go. A little bit about Mormons. Thanks for listening to the program, folks. Thank you again to everybody in the chat room. We will be back in 2 weeks, and we leave you with David Byrne singing Finite Equals All Right. Bye-bye.
Okay, I have no joke about that one. Bye-bye.
315 cities in the world, just 30 teeth inside of our heads. These are the limits to our experience. It's scary, but it's alright, and everything is finite. Only one record in this whole wide world where Jimi Hendrix sings Houseman and Dad. Another Elvis will not come along, he got wasted, but it's alright, and everything is fine.
Yeah,
wasted, it's alright, everything is fine. I'm just a baby my daddy's arms, who will protect me from these women's charms? I'm 6 foot tall, but I barely speak. My mind goes crazy when the taste is sweet. Well, we've known each other 8 years and 20 days. Terrifying, so beautiful too. Things have an end, but feeling is infinite. We're changing, but it's all right. Everything.